Good morning. Chief Judge Baker is unable to attend the hearing this morning. However, he's going to listen to the recording and he will participate in this case on the record. At this time, we'll call United States versus Nash. This is a certified case, so the government will go first.
May it please the court. I'm Captain Balfonce, along with Mr. Keller, represent the government. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
The lower court erred for 3 reasons, which I would like to address in the following order. The lower court applied the wrong implied bias test. Assuming the lower court articulated the correct standard of review and implied bias test, the lower court erred in finding implied bias. And 3, the lower court applied the wrong standard of review. Viewed objectively, implied bias exists when most people in the member's position would be prejudiced. The lower court erred by making this test an additional consideration and focusing on the perception or appearance of fairness in the military justice system. Here, if we look at this court's case law, the test has been reiterated in different ways. One has been combined into an objective lens, as well as the test itself, that being seen in Moreno. You also have it where it's been separated out, most recently in Bagstaff. Additionally, you also see what the lower court did in Terry, where it made it an additional consideration.
Well, I think you said that this court has enunciated a number of standards and tests in this area, and you have centered on this one, that most people in the same position of the member would be biased. But is that the only test that we use? I mean, in looking back over our jurisprudence, it seems to me that there's a variety of language that we've used to discuss this area.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that, but when you look at the results of each of the cases, it comes down to the circumstances of that individual member. And that's what this court should focus on and make it clear for everyone throughout that it's whether or not most people in the member's position, the circumstances, would be prejudiced. And that, with multiple tests, you're getting into an issue of not having clarity for the lower courts or for the military judges at trial.
But it's really two different things, isn't it? You got actual and you got implied. And you should have, they are not a continuum. Unfortunately, in some cases, we've sort of slid along a continuum. We say, well, it's not actual, but now let's see if it's sort of implied. Where ought we to be in this thing? You know, the multiplicity of standards the Chief Judge mentioned, you know, where should we be?
I think this court should follow the government's suggested test. Viewed objectively, would most people in the member's position be prejudiced? Because that would bring it in line with the Supreme Court case Smith v. Phillips, where the Justice O'Connor stated that in some extreme circumstances, you can look to implied bias. And she gave some examples, which this court's case law follows. Whether or not a juror is an actual employee of the prosecuting agency, relative to one of the participants in trial, as well as was a witness in the crime.
Right, but those all have to do with position or something the person did. And that's not what we're dealing with here, isn't it? We're dealing with something, with a question he submitted. Doesn't that fall really into actual bias or nothing?
Yes, Your Honor, that is true. It is actual bias or not. However, in this court's case law, when a military judge has failed to address implied bias, this court has went ahead and tested for implied bias.
Well, no, but that's not what I'm saying. I mean, if it's actual bias or nothing, then why should he test for implied?
Well, according to the case law, that's what has been required. Now, to cover his bases, the military judge realized that it comes down to actual bias, said he did not make up his mind, and then to cover his bases, he went ahead and addressed implied bias. If not, I think the appellee here would have had a stronger argument for implied bias, at least more grounds to say there was no clear signal, maybe had a better argument.
Well, but you're still running around an implied bias, and I'm talking actual bias here.
Yes, Your Honor. Here, let's make it clear, there was no actual bias. The military.
Well, the judge held there was no actual bias.
Correct. Right. And the CCA, the lower court, did not overturn that. So that's all the case. Here, there is no actual bias. And that's really what it comes down to. So when you use the implied bias test on these facts, the only conclusion is that there is no implied bias. And then
The government is not asking us to eliminate the implied bias test, nor are you asking us to decide this case without applying the implied bias test. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
With one of our issues, we just want this court to clarify for everyone what the implied bias test is. And we articulate that as viewed objectively, most people in the member's position would be prejudiced.
Well, what about the focus, the viewed through the eyes of the public? And in Minyard, 1997 case, the court phrased the standard whether or not there's substantial doubt about the legality, fairness, and impartiality of the court-martial when viewed through the eyes of the public.
Yes, Your Honor. We're getting, it seems, from 912 F1N. And that language seems to cover both actual and implied bias. And with implied bias, though, it shouldn't just be looking at fairness. Again, it runs into not having a clear rule for the military justice system. Instead, it should follow our articulated test. Not only would it bring it in line with this court's results in case law, with the Supreme Court Smith v. Phillips, but also bring it in line with the way federal courts apply. The federal cases, specifically, they articulate tests such as where the relationship between a prospective juror and some aspect of the litigation is such that it's highly unlikely that the average person could remain impartial in his deliberations under the circumstances.
Is there any question that a member could ask during the trial or ask the military judge to ask a witness during the trial that would constitute implied bias?
Question, no. Maybe if it came out in the colloquy with the military judge. Maybe it could really, if, in this case, if he came out and said, I believe that he's a pedophile, I think then we're getting into actual bias. But here is merely a question. And blending into my third AOE, we have to look at the timing of this question. This question came after the government arrested, after it put on 9 witnesses, stipulation of testimony, as well as 3 witnesses into the defense's case.
Well, let's look at that for a minute. Let's say that he did, in a question, say, I think this guy's a pedophile, and then went on to ask another question. And for some reason, the military judge found there was no actual bias. Would a member of the public viewing that think that a person who has already made that statement, do you think they could give their impression would be it's a fair proceeding?
If they're applying the test of most people in that position, looking at the member's circumstances, they would see that he had not made up his mind.
Well, what if he said, my supposition was that he had made the statement, I think this guy's a pedophile.
Well, then at that point, I think we have a good argument for actual bias.
No, but the military judge, for some reason, held there was no actual bias.
I think, Your Honor, that would be wrong.
Well, I mean, you can make that argument here. I mean, that it should have been actual bias here, but I'm just dealing with that scenario.
With that, Your Honor, if they find no actual bias, I think if you apply the implied bias test, again, most people in his position, he's already come to a conclusion. Really, I think that's couching implied bias, actual bias, in implied bias language. I think that's what that is.
In the government's position, that's the only test that we can apply for implied bias, a person in the member's position.
Yes, Your Honor. I think it'll bring it in line with the Supreme Court, this court's case law, as well as the federal courts.
Thank you.
Now, as far as the particulars of this case, we're looking at comparing it to this court's case law. This court has defined 3 broad categories in which this court has found implied bias, one being some substantial emotional involvement in the case, two, knowing someone that has been a victim of a similar crime, and 3, having some relationship with a party, witness, or another member. And here, Master Gunner Sergeant S. does not fall into any of those categories. That came out during the initial voir dire, and again, that was not challenged later. Additionally, looking at what Master Gunner Sergeant was doing, he was just an engaged member. He was just trying to get more information to make a decision. Who knows what he was trying to find out?
His replies when the judge decided to voir dire, which admittedly was a little later.
Yes, sir.
They make no sense. I mean, he's meandering around in the characteristics of Asian women. He's meandering, you know, and you say that he's just an engaged member?
Yes, Your Honor. He asked at the end of it about 40% of the questions for findings. And he's just...
Well, I'm not concerned with the other four, with the 40%. I'm concerned with this question and his answers to the judge.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm just giving context.
Yeah.
Whenever this member has a question, he's submitting a questionnaire. That's what he's doing. And he was trying to come up for a reason why he wanted to ask this question. Who knows why he wanted to ask this question? Maybe he didn't.
Well, we have to know why he wanted to ask this question, don't we?
No, Your Honor. You just have to look at his circumstances. Now, in those answers, none of those reveal any circumstances that would show that most people in his position would be prejudiced.
Well, and then I go back to what the chief judge asked, which isn't this fundamentally actual bias, you know, hiding under implied?
Yes, Your Honor. That's what it is.
Thank you.
And Your Honor, looking at his ultimate explanation as to why he asked, or why he has not made up his mind, he stated that he's not 19 years old. He's been in the Marine Corps for 25 years. His wife has taught him to keep an open mind. And then he got deeply personal and explained that his son, who has autism, has taught him he needs to keep an open mind and make informed decisions. And that's what he was doing. He was just asking questions, trying to make an informed decision at a time when we were nearly done with trial. And if I may address the final issue, as far as the standard of review, the lower court applied the wrong standard of review by using de novo review because there was a clear signal that the military judge knew the liberal grant mandate and the implied bias test. At the very beginning of trial, the military judge articulated the liberal grant mandate and gave a clear signal that he understood the implied bias test by actually applying it and dismissing two members.
How do we know that when he applied or when he evaluated this circumstance, he applied the liberal bias analysis?
Because, Your Honor, I think looking at the totality of circumstances, there's a military judge that articulated 3 days before, and then here, I think it's 3 days later, thinking it's unreasonable to think that he would have forgot what the law is.
Well, how far back do we go? If he enunciated it and applied it in the case that he tried before, do we take that into consideration?
No, Your Honor. You're looking at the totality of circumstances, so that means you're looking at the record of trial here. And so if it's in the record of trial, that's what you're looking at. And 3 days before, he articulated it properly, and he applied it correctly. And here, Your Honor, we do have him mentioning the implied bias, but we don't have him mentioning liberal grant mandate, but that doesn't matter because he did mention it before. And additionally, Your Honor, I think it's clear, really, this question is about actual bias. And so he made that determination, and based upon this court's case law, he wanted to cover all the bases, so he applied the implied bias test.
Does the implied bias test really translate very well to an issue that arises like this mid-trial? I mean, it seems to me that it originally arose during voir dire, during those sorts of questions, and similarly, the liberal grant mandate applies easily before trial, but how do those things work in the middle of trial? Isn't the question then whether there's actual bias? Full stop?
Yes, Your Honor. I think so. But I think the problem is that this court, whenever a military judge has failed to address implied bias, even if he's addressed actual bias, this court has went ahead and reviewed for implied bias. And so that's why he was covering that. But I do understand what you're saying. But that's the implied bias test that we have. That's the only test that we do have. So this court would have to create something to apply in the middle of trial if it decides not to use this test.
Counsel, turning to page 14 of the slip opinion of the court below, the court said, if I've got this right here, we're left with an improper question indicative of having improperly reached a preliminary finding, apparently asked for reasons that fall somewhere between irrelevant and repugnant to the duties of a court member. Whichever standard we apply, is there anything incorrect about the court's analysis below of the situation that they faced?
Yes, Your Honor. As far as that specifically, perhaps a cultural stereotype, but that did not come out and actually show that he was actually biased against Japanese women. Instead, that's just merely that, if anything, that would go to actual bias, which the military judge found no actual bias, and the CCA did not overturn it.
Is it the government's view that it was a proper question, that it was not indicative of having improperly reached a preliminary finding, and that it was not asked for reasons that fall between irrelevant and repugnant?
Sir, Your Honor.
I'm trying to look at what the court said it was applying when it applied the test, irrespective of what test it applied, whether it applied the test of Bagstead, whether it applied Moreno, whether it applied whatever you've derived from the Supreme Court. Whichever test you apply, how do you deal with what the court said its observations were with respect to the question?
As far as being indicative of having improperly reached a preliminary finding, no, Your Honor, we disagree with that. If anything, that's just a question with a presumption. We all know that you can ask questions that have presumptions. And so, again, we're looking at what's the circumstances surrounding that member. And what's more telling with the court, lower court's opinion is if you look down at the bottom of the last paragraph, while we cannot state with any certainty what Master Gunnery actually thought of the state of the evidence, it is clear to this court from the call of his question to the appellant's wife that he had already reached the conclusion that the appellant was guilty. Again, Your Honor, that's actual bias in the guise of implied bias.
Well, then why, if it's actual bias, don't we just affirm the lower court and say that their analysis with respect to implied bias is irrelevant because the military judge below erred when they didn't find that he had actual bias and should have been dismissed under FM?
No, Your Honor, it's law of the case. Number one, the military judge found no actual bias. Number two, CCA did not overturn that. So that is law of the case.
So you're saying we can't do what I just said? Is that what you're saying?
Unless you want to, if you find that it's clearly erroneous and would work a manifest injustice, then you could.
Isn't law of the case a discretionary doctrine?
Yes, Your Honor. And this court is hesitant to disregard that unless it is clearly erroneous. And that it
well, if in the face of this, the military judge abused his discretion by not granting a challenge for actual bias, isn't that enough?
No, Your Honor. No, there was no actual bias. We have whether or not there's actual bias, whether or not he'll yield to the evidence or the instructions. The military judge had an extensive colloquy about that, and we have the member's passionate explanation as to why he's keeping an open mind. He's not young, he's older, he has a wife, his son, all those explain why. And the military judge was there to see his demeanor. And that's why this court applies an abusive discretion standard for a military judge's decision on actual bias.
Counsel, I'm not sure how the law of the case applies in this circumstance. If you have a situation in which a judge has or a court below has decided not to reach as far as actual bias, and they've concluded implied bias, but it's a case in which actual bias would apply. In affirming the court below, we don't have to make the decision in that case that actual bias applies. That is, we don't have to undo the law of the case. But why can't we take that into account in saying that their implied bias, which doesn't go as far, would clearly be correct? And I know you're not agreeing with this. I'm just talking in theory. If we would view the case as applying actual bias, why can't you take that into account, even though you don't, in terms of the law of the case, we would not hold in this case that there is actual bias. But if we would view this as having actual bias, then why can't we take that into account saying, well, the court below was being conservative in their approach to it and perhaps being kind to the parties involved. But if we see this case as involving actual bias, we don't have to say that. We can say that at least it's implied bias.
Your Honor, from this court's case law...
I'm just talking about in terms of the law of the case doctrine. I'm not asking you to concede any of those underlying legal points.
Right. Yes, Your Honor. This court has kept these two separate, actual and implied bias. It says where actual bias stops, that's where implied bias begins. And my understanding is that you don't consider the actual bias. You just look at and apply the test of the circumstances of the member.
Can there ever be a case of actual bias which would not be implied bias?
Which would not be implied bias?
Right. Can you ever have a case in which there's actual bias, in which there's one of the statutory or regulatory criteria are violated, which for whatever reason is not reached at trial or at the intermediate level of appeal? Is there ever a case in which that would not also include implied bias? Everybody looks at the record and says, gee, statutory or regulatory criterion is violated, therefore it must be at least implied bias.
No, Your Honor. I can't think of a situation off the top of my head, Your Honor. But I would direct this court's attention to a case that the government subsided, Serrato-Reyes. And in that case, the court ran into a similar situation in which a juror had made some cultural stereotype statements. And the court analyzed what happened down below and said that it may go more to actual bias, but under the standard that we review it, we can't overturn it. And then looking at implied bias, again, it looked at the circumstances of the member to be consistent with Smith v. Phillips as well as with its own case law.
And counsel, I see you're out of time. You can continue this on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for Appellate.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Major Kirk Sipigno, and I'm a counsel for the appellee, Staff Sergeant Jeremy J. Nash. The government really wants this case to be complex, but it's not a complex case. Regardless of the standard of review that is applied, be it plain error, abuse of discretion, less than abuse of discretion, less than abuse of discretion, or something less than that, it was error for Master Gunnery Sergeant S. to remain on the panel after his challenge. Master Guns made up his mind prematurely. He held racial stereotypes that would cause him to discount the testimony of the two remaining witnesses less, and he had an inflexible attitude on sentencing. And when you take these things into account with the fact that the military judge could have excused Master Guns from the panel without affecting the quorum, the error really becomes plain. The government has sort of pointed, they would really like this court to circumscribe the implied bias test to only the positions, as the federal court case law has been done. But Smith versus Phillips, all the federal court cases, all those things, what they fail to point out is that those cases are looking at implied bias with respect to the limitations placed on it by either the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment in the case of Smith versus Phillips, or the Sixth Amendment right to a fair jury trial. Now, as this court is aware, military case law revolves around 912F1N. And there's a court that makes determinations of what that rule means, and that's this court. And this court's case law has said the two purposes of RCM 912F1N are to protect the actual fairness of the court-martial and to bolster the appearance of fairness in the military justice system in the eyes of the public. Therefore, this court should really decline the invitation to circumscribe the rights that are provided under RCM 912F1N to make those equal to or the exact same as the rights provided under the Due Process Clause or the Sixth Amendment right to a fair trial. Obviously, the Sixth Amendment right doesn't even apply. The statutory right is provided by RCM 912. The issue really becomes about whether it's actual bias or whether it's implied bias. I think the courts below made a clear decision, and the decision they made was that Master Guns did not maintain a open mind throughout the trial. And as this court has sort of hinted at, whether that is an actual bias or implied bias finding, if the concern of RCM 912F1N is a public perception of fairness, which it has said in the past over and over again that it is one of the concerns of RCM 912F1N, then this court should affirm the lower court's decision setting aside the verdict here.
Counsel, could you talk to us a little bit about whose decision we're reviewing here as a practical matter? That is, are we reviewing the decision of the military judge, or are we reviewing the decision of the court below? I know technically we're reviewing the decision of the court below, but as a practical matter, whose decision are we reviewing? And if you could address that in terms of whether any of the statements made by the court below constitute findings of fact.
It really is looking at the trial judge's, obviously the fundamental underlying issue is the decision by the trial judge to allow the member to remain on the panel after his challenge. Now, that is a finding of fact that he makes, that he has kept an open mind, so that's reviewed to see whether it's clearly erroneous. You know, the lower court, and I would point out that we did at trial and at the, in the lower court argue that he had actual bias, that he had made up his mind prematurely. And we obviously didn't petition that because the government certified the case. But that finding of fact is reviewable by this court. It's not a finding of fact under the Article 66 powers of the lower court that would be unreviewable. Meaning that if this court determines on its own that, you know, that he did not keep an open mind and that would affect the fundamental fairness, as we discussed before, that should be a consideration, and this court could affirm the lower court and should affirm the lower court.
Would that be 912FN or 912FM?
I think it would be a 912FN1M, Your Honor, but, you know, I think that when we have a case, and as Your Honor pointed out in the government's argument, when the implied bias test that has been created doesn't really contemplate this sort of situation where a member says, hey, or gives some indication that he's made up his mind. I mean, the idea being that what the lower court basically said is they sort of applied 912F1N and said, you know, the implication of what he has said is something that would affect the public perception of fairness. And it's unclear whether this court would extend that to this particular case, but it should. If a lower court cannot overturn a case based on something that is as fundamental as the public perception of fairness, as this court has said for military justice, then you're really hamstring the lower court's ability to help this court maintain the legitimacy for military justice that is required.
What do we do with the inconsistency or the seeming inconsistency in the CCA opinion? They found that the military judge did not abuse his discretion when he found that there was no actual bias. But then they went on to use language that appears that they found that there was actual bias.
Yes, Your Honor, it's sort of an inartful statement. I mean, I think that this court could say, look, we believe what they meant was this, that regardless of, notwithstanding the member's disclaimer and sort of the military judge and the prosecutor's compliments to the emperor's new clothes, that the member did in fact make up his mind, at least from their point of view. And you could say it is an actual bias finding as the panel has sort of suggested, or you could look at it and you could extend the implied bias test to this particular kind of circumstance. The Terry circumstances test, where we talk about, where this court has talked about protecting the fairness of military justice and the perception of fairness of military justice, is a very important test in a police view, because it allows the lower courts to deal with situations like this that may potentially arise and without having to, you know, come to some sort of strange dogmatic conclusion. For example, in this case where he says, or the example that we use in our brief is if the member says, you know, I'm very prejudiced against Asian Americans, the defendant's an Asian American, and the judge says, well, do you think you can set that aside? And he says yes, and the judge says, I find that it's not going to affect your decision-making. I think the idea there in a case like that is that the court, I don't think this court would really want the trial to go on in that particular case with that member sitting on the bench. I mean, the perception and the risk that the public would perceive that member got a fair trial, did not get a fair trial, rather, is just too great in this kind of situation. That's sort of a hypothetical that Your Honor was hinting at earlier in the oral argument.
Would you address the government's law of the case contention?
Well, first of all, it is a prudential doctrine. And again, as we pointed out, we did object the entire way. And also the fact that the lower court has made what is sort of an unusual or perhaps conflicting ruling could allow this court to, should allow, and it should gravitate this court towards not applying the prudential doctrine. I mean, the lower court, for its purpose, I mean, their point overall was clear, and their point was that Master Dunn's question and the colloquy that followed suggested that he had already made up his mind. And if that is the case, and they mistakenly decided an actual bias case and an implied bias case, or they chose to apply implied bias and not have to reach the actual bias in order to, you know, save the parties below some sort of embarrassment or something, that is something that would suggest against using that prudential doctrine.
Is there any way, in appellant's view, that we can decide this case and also clean up the multiplicity of standards which seems to have arisen in this area?
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. You know, when we talk about the amounts of standards that have arisen, this court should look at creating less standards of review. You want to have black, white and gray standards rather than black, white, gray, ecru, eggshell, off-white. and the point being that the less amount of standards there are, the clearer it is for the lower courts.
And how would you suggest we do this?
You could simply say that you know, the less than abuse of discretion for a case where you properly articulate the law, and less than that, what this court has meant all along is that is de novo review. As the court has said, de novo review doesn't mean no deference. It means the deference that is afforded under Article 66. And de novo review is really appropriate in these kinds of bias cases where it's implied bias, because the public is going to look at this case in the same fashion that the lower court is going to look at. They're going to be on the same footing. The lower court can make that decision.
But don't we usually restrict de novo review to questions of law? And here you're talking about an objective standard as applied by the public, which is a far cry from a straight application of law.
Right, there's not necessarily as clear-cut legal standards, but I think that for the purposes of simplicity for the lower court, they can simply say, look, the test is would this do injury to the public perception of fairness within military justice as a matter of law, rather than adding some level of deference. And to be clear, as we stated before, I mean, the key of this case does not turn on whether he got de novo review or less than abuse of discretion. I mean, the lower court plainly thought that the member had made up his mind prematurely.
You've given us kind of a smorgasbord of what we can do in this case. What is your position as to what we should do?
This court should affirm the lower court's decision, and it should take up the implied bias test for these particular kinds of challenges. I mean, the idea, if RCM 912F1N is in fact, as this court has said, sort of angled towards the public perception of fairness, in a case where a member says he made up his mind prematurely, the answer should not be that we look and say most members wouldn't have made up their mind in those circumstances.
So your position is we should affirm on implied bias, and what test should we apply?
Yes, Your Honor.
Which one of those implied bias standards should we use?
The standard that looks from Terry, which is the circumstances, whether the challenge member's circumstances do injury to the perception or appearance of fairness in military. I mean, that was a standard that was articulated both Terry and Elbaz, and the government sort of parses words, the fact that one opinion is also and one is not.
Counselor, if he's actually made up his mind, right, then there's actual bias. And if there's actual bias, why do we go to imply bias at all?
I think that's correct. I mean, that would be the shortest sort of way to determine the case. You know, I think
we keep on saying that the reason that we should affirm is because it was clear that he made up his mind. Right, from his question, which presupposed that the guy was a pedophile.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, I think that's the shortest way without having to reach the second issue.
I mean, as delightful as the prospect is of cleaning up the implied bias standard mess is, I'm just wondering, I mean, I thought that the rule was if there's actual bias, you don't get to implied bias.
I think as Senior Judge Afar pointed out, when you have actual bias, the implication of bias is always there. I think that's a very logical decision. So, yes, Your Honor, it could be decided that way. You know, we think that the extension of the implied bias to this particular type of challenge would be appropriate, too. So, if there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you.
Counsel, I have a question, please, before you begin, so that I don't interrupt you.
Yes, sir.
Are you aware of a federal case where a juror has asked a question during the findings portion of a trial that presupposes that they've reached a decision?
No, Your Honor, I was not able to find one.
Okay. No, I just wondered. I wasn't able to find one either.
Yes,
thought,
ma'am.
Maybe you were younger and adept.
No, Your Honor.
To go back to the law of the case doctrine, which always is intriguing, if in a search and seizure case, if the military judge determines that there was no probable cause, but that the seizure was permissible as an inspection, and the case comes up to this court on a defense appeal, can this court determine, looking at the record, that there was probable cause and not reach the inspection issue, or are we bound by the law of the case doctrine there? That is, does the law of the case doctrine apply to the decision that was reached, or does it apply to all the analysis that led to the decision?
Your Honor, I'm not sure about that hypothetical, Your Honor.
The question here is the decision, whether the member sits or not, Is that what is the essence of the law of the case doctrine, or is it the theory under which he sits or not?
I'm not sure I'm following your question.
Well, that does the law of the case doctrine matter with respect to whether it's actual or implied bias, one way or another? That is, if there's a decision by the court below that the member should not sit, does it matter whether that's actual or implied bias for purposes of the law of the case doctrine as to what we can consider when the case comes up here?
Yes, sir. It would seem that although a challenge for cause is one issue, you have broken down. You have two separate legal tests. You have the actual and implied bias. Now, I have not seen this court go ahead and review for actual bias after the lower court has found that there has not been any actual bias. I've not run across that. And I think because these are two separate tests, this court is bound by what happened with actual bias. Now, on top of that, there is no actual bias. We have the military judge that was there that was able to observe the member's demeanor, which this court has articulated is important for determining actual bias. Additionally, Your Honor, I'd like to, in my last few seconds, is to clarify what the government is proposing for the implied bias test. We're proposing, I know in my brief I talked about Marino, but I want to do one modification. Viewing the circumstances through the eyes of the public and focusing on the perception or appearance of fairness in the court-martial, not the military justice system. This would bring it more in line with the language of 912F1N that talks about a court-martial, not the military justice system in general. I think that when that was brought up, that expanded what 912 meant.
I see you're out of time.
Yes,
you can briefly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. This court should clearly articulate what the implied bias test is, and that most people in Master Gunnery Sergeant S's position would not be prejudiced because he had no strong emotional involvement, no close personal ties with someone who was a victim of a similar crime, and he did not have any close relationships with any of the parties. This is my report.
Thank you. The court thanks the attorneys for both parties. The case is submitted, and the court will begin recess until further order of the court.
All rise. Court stands adjourned until further order.